Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with Get Reading for Friday the 13th of March. We'll try and hope that this show goes without a hitch on the superstitious day. And joining me is Charles Watts from Get Reading. Charles, hello.
Hi, Dan. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not so bad. I've only literally just realised it's Friday the 13th, so we're going to have to take things carefully for the rest
Tread
of the day.
Tread carefully, mate.
Yeah, very much so. Well, this is rare. We are going to get together and we're going to talk about two positive results in a week for Reading. I cannot remember the last time that happened.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
We've had the old-fashioned win, then lose, cut the draws, but this time a 0-0 draw at Bradford and a 2-1 win over Brighton. Certainly a week that Steve Clarke needed.
Happy days, eh? Happy days. Yeah, no, very good week, I think. I think it was really important they followed up that good result at Bradford with a win on Tuesday night, and they'd done that. And I think it was an important win for a lot of reasons on Tuesday, really, just especially with that big quarterfinal replay approach. And I think to get a win at the Madstad and end that sort of losing streak and the struggles that they've got there, I think it was really important sort of mentally for them as well. And I thought they played well. It was a thoroughly deserved win. I thought Brighton were dreadful, I have to admit. I was really disappointed with them, especially given they'd had a week off, basically. And last time out, they'd beaten Derby. I thought they were really poor. But Reading just from the start, I thought were the better side and thoroughly deserved the win. And what I was also impressed with the fact they came back after conceding the penalty. They came back and quickly got themselves back in front again, which it kind of added to that character that everyone's been talking about that they showed at Valley Parade a few days earlier, and so I thought that was important as well.
Yeah, that was the first time in 10 league games Reading had scored at home in the second half. I had to check it three times to make sure I was right, but yeah, they scored two in the first half against Norwich and against Sheffield Wednesday, but you have to go back to the Rotherham game, and this game reminded me a lot of that Rotherham game, but Reading perhaps not quite as clinical and Brighton maybe a tick above that, but as you say, they were very poor and Reading thoroughly deserved the win. I mean, for you, what was more impressive, Reading going and getting that draw at Valley Parade or the way they came back and managed to seal that win even against Brighton?
I thought at Valley Parade, I thought they were absolutely excellent, I've got to say. I think it was slightly different if you were at that game than whether you watched it on TV. I've spoken to a lot of people who weren't at the match and just sort of fobbed it off as a really disappointing game that, you know, weren't good for the neutral, little quality on show. But I've got to say, I loved it up there. I really did. I thought the atmosphere, the colour, it was of the home fans and the away fans, obviously, and the challenge, it was thunderous. And I think being so close to the pitch there, you could feel every single challenge that was flying in. It was a massive, massive physical battle for Reading, and they stood toe-to-toe with Bradford, which a lot of clubs haven't been able to do. It's no fluke when you go back over the last few years who Bradford have beaten. They've beaten Arsenal, they've beaten Wigan, who were in the Premier League then. They've beaten Aston Villa, they've beaten Chelsea, they've beaten Sunderland. It's not a fluke, it's not a one-off. You know, you don't beat those five teams without having a certain way of playing that gets you success against the bigger clubs. And you look back to that Sunderland game and they just rolled over and let Bradford boss them. And Reading didn't do that. They stood toe-to-toe with them. And I thought it was a really, really good performance. And full credit to them for that. I was really impressed by them.
A lot has been made about the pitch and a lot of people are just dismissing Bradford as a team that will bully sides on their own turf. From what you saw of Bradford that day, and I suppose we'll come on and talk about the replay later, but do you think this was, should Reading have finished that tie off at Valley Parade, or do you think they've got a better chance now that it's back at the Medeski?
No, I don't think they should have finished it off at Valley Parade, just because I don't think they were good enough going forward to finish it off at Valley Parade. Obviously they had a couple of chances and Pog had one at the end, which, having watched it back now, it's clear it was a handball anyway, so I'm actually kind of glad they didn't go in, because I think that would have caused an awful lot of controversy that would have come the club's way if it had punched that one in at the end. But I don't think they did enough to win the game. I just thought getting a draw there was a good result. And I mean, now you look at it, obviously the pressure is going to be on Reading. They're going to be expected to win. I think Reading went there, despite being in the Championship, they went there as underdogs last week. That's not going to be the case on Monday. Reading are going to be expected to win this one, but it's still going to be a real challenge for them. I mean, Bradford, they're a decent side. There's only, what, 10 places, 11, yeah, 12 places, something far separating them in the football pyramid. So, you know, they're not a dreadful team, far from it. And I mean, geez, you only have to look at what they did at Chelsea and the manner of football they played at Chelsea. Look at the goals they scored in that game, and they're a decent side, and that's playing on a better pitch where they can actually play some passes, and you can't do that. Valley Parade is dreadful, and so I think they'll actually enjoy coming here. Actually saying that, I was going to say play on a better surface, but it's not actually that much better.
No,
but they will. It's not going to be, just because Redden are at home now, it's certainly not going to be a walkover, far from it. They're going to have a real decent performance to get past Bradford here, and it's far, far from a done deal.
Yeah, lots of team changes as well in both those games. I think we talked and said, oh, well, you know, would Steve Clark stick an extra man in the middle? And sure enough, he went and did at Valley Parade, and then completely changed the things up for the Brighton game with the likes of Chalobah coming in at left back and all sorts of different shifts. Does Steve Clark know his best team at the moment, or is this literally just mixing and matching because of fitness, or is he trying to find a system?
I think he's kind of settled on a bit of a system for certain games. I mean, he certainly likes to tinker. And you look at some of the changes he made on Tuesday night, for example, and they were kind of enforced. Like, Abita got an injury against Bradford, and Travner was obviously injured. Clark said he would have played if...
He's missed his moment.
I know, he has missed his moment. That might be his only one as well. And Clark said he would have played had he been available, and obviously wasn't. And they just don't really have any left-sided cover. So Chalobah played there, and fair play to him. He played very well. He's a man of... He can certainly slot into a lot of positions, Chalobah. And so I think that was kind of enforced. But in terms of does he know his best team? I don't think he does. I mean, you've got the Hal Robson-Kanu problem on the left-hand side, where he continues to play him. He continues to... flatter to deceive. I mean, he went off again, having been fairly anonymous on Tuesday night. Obviously, he's done the business in the FA Cup so far, Hal, but not quite so much in the league. And I think that problem, the left-hand side, needs working on, and maybe in the summer. But I don't think he knows. I mean, answering your question, I don't think he does know his best 11.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who does play in the game against Bradford. I said, we'll come on to that in just a minute, but the star... certainly of Tuesday night and probably of the last month, the man named the club's man of the month, player of the month, Jamie Mackie, two absolutely cracking strikes against Brighton. But it's immediately led to a lot of questions about his future. He's obviously only on loan here until the end of the season. He's got another year on his Forest contract after that. So, I mean, what is the latest with Jamie Mackie? Do you think that Redden will try and keep him, or do you think this is a case of... he's almost played so well that he's played his way back into Dougie Friedman's plans.
Yeah, I mean, I think Redden will probably try and keep him. Clark certainly likes him. Whether they can do, I don't know, because Jamie Mackie, from what I hear, is on a very, very good contract at Nottingham Forest. And this is going to be a summer of culling wages for Redden. And it's taking on someone who's going to be on very high wages on... I remain to be convinced. Speaking to Mackie about it on Tuesday night, classic footballer. He was very much keeping his options open, saying he was loving it at Reading, but he was at a great club at Nottingham Forest. He said he had a lot of respect for the new manager there, and you know, he was just playing it straight and keeping his options open, which he would do. But I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's made one level impact the last month or so. And kind of going back to that, Steve Clark, does he know his best team? I mean, I think Jamie Mackie's given him a bit of a... I was going to say problem, but it's actually kind of resolved a bit of a problem, I think, because the way he's playing at the moment, playing up front, you can get Mackie and McCleary in the side now, which helps, I think, because obviously those two are competing on the right wing. But I like the look of Mackie up front now. It gives him more movement and fluency going forward, which I haven't really had before. And obviously it means you can have McCleary in the side as well. So I think that's kind of solved a little bit of a problem for Clark. And I do hope he persists with Mackie in that, leading that front line with Pog or Blackman, whoever it is he chooses.
I think it's helped the fans get behind the team as well, because Jamie Mackie is one of those few players we've got in this current squad that you can really get behind, because you really sense his passion. He gives 110%, and you know, with all due respect to the likes of Nick Blackman and Hal Robson-Kanu, you can't always get behind those players in the same way. But Jamie Mackie, even though he's on loan, you'd get the feeling he'd die for the shirt, and it is helping fans slowly get to like the side a little bit more. So I really hope he stays. Financially, as you said, it's very much up in the air. But there is clearly a little bit of money in the coffers, because Reading have made another signing. Reading have signed an England international this week, Charles. Zat Knight has joined our defensive core. He's joined on a free transfer. How did this one all come about?
I don't know. It came absolutely out of the blue. I mean, Clark said it was about 2 weeks in the offing, you've been speaking about it. Just quickly back to Jamie Mackie there before I get on tonight. You talk about their diamond for the cause. We spoke to him afterwards, and his missus is a couple of days overdue. Well, she was on Tuesday. I'm not sure what's happened between now and then. And it's like, well, he speaks to a lot of players and they miss games because they think their missus is going to go overdue. And he was having none of it. He was like, even if it's she goes into labour on the FA Cup day, she knows the score I'm playing in the FA Cup. And, you know, fair play to him. He's like, look, football's my job. She knows, you know, we've got a very nice lifestyle because of my job. And my wife understands that it has to come first. So if she goes into labour on Monday, unfortunately, he's not going to be there. And fair play to him. I think that sums him up.
Absolutely.
But yeah, anyway. Onto that night, suddenly started emerging during the week, came out of the blue, and strange one for me. I'm not really convinced it was needed. I mean, Steve, who am I to say that, though? I mean, Steve Clark obviously knows a lot better than I do, and he felt the need was to bring in defensive cover. But I just think if there was a chance of relegation, maybe so, but you know, I think Reading can pretty much lose all of their remaining games now and still pretty much stay up. So it just kind of, to me, looks like a bit of a waste of wages, really. You got Cooper as the third choice. You got Shallowbury can play at centre-back. I'm not sure it was really worth the money. But as I said, who am I to say that? The gaffer's the guy in charge. He knows what's best. And
I was going to say, up on the tyleliston.com, we've got a bit of an interview with a Bolton blogger who also follows the MLS. And he didn't have the nicest things to say about Zat, although he did compliment the way he was off the pitch as well, said he was a good influence. So maybe this is just a case of, you know, bringing in a bit of experience to help nurture the likes of Jake Cooper and Michael Hexter. But in saying that, I thought Reading already had one of those players in the squad. Maybe this is a company for Anton Ferdinand on the golf course.
Exactly. It seems a bit strange just to pay wages, just to get someone in to nurture some of the younger lads through. Piercy can do that. Like I said, Ferdinand's not doing much else, so he could do that. And just seems a little bit of a strange one to me. But, you know, if he comes on, scores a winner at Wembley in the semi-final and then heads home a FA Cup winning goal in May, then I think we'll all look back on it as a masterstroke.
Well, absolutely. Well, speaking of Anton Ferdinand, is there any developments on the injury front with him? There's obviously a couple of others in the treatment as well. You mentioned Travner, Pierce. Jem Karachan as well. What is the latest for some of these players?
Well, I think Pierce should be fine for tomorrow. The manager says whether we see him wearing one of those now infamous face masks, we'll have to wait and see. But I saw his face on Tuesday night after the game. I said hello as he walked past, and it was looking in a hell of a state, I've got to say. Nose isn't pretty. So I don't know if he will have to wear a mask or anything like that. But the manager said yesterday that he was fine. He was training yesterday and he'd be okay for the weekend. I think they are looking at straightening the nose at some point. The doctor wants to do that. I know, but whether they wait till the end of the season to do that or I'm not sure, but I think Steve Clark certainly expected him to be okay for Saturday. Jem, I don't think he'll be okay for Saturday, but obviously got some time for the under-21s last week, which is a positive. Anton Ferdinand, I mean, I just don't think we're going to see him. I just don't think we're going to see him at all this season. I don't get the impression he's anywhere close. Sort of mentioned it in the press conference on Thursday and saying, well, so is that night coming in suggests that Anton's, you know, completely long term. And Steve Clark almost kind of just laughed. It was like, well, he's played 48 minutes all season. So I think it's safe to say it is fairly long term.
Oh, it's so funny. It's just so bad. It's funny at this stage.
It's safe to say that one can sort of be put amid the catastrophic signing category. But he's got another year left on his contract, so you never know, he might play 48.
Did he make your list up on Get Reading of the worst free transfer signings?
He didn't, because I didn't put any current players in there, just because you never know what they're going to do before they leave the club. He could, you know, he's got another year on his contract.
He could suddenly
play 48 games next season and be a hero. And it's the same with, someone mentioned Danny Guthrie, but Guthrie could curl home a free kick in a semi-final at Wembley and be remembered for that one moment. So I thought it would be unfair to put players in there who could still do something and make their mark during their time at Reading.
Let's give them their dues.
Exactly.
I don't think it's going to happen, but
you never know.
Choose all the same. Right, moving on then to those games. We've got this Watford game on Saturday. It's a real tricky one for Steve Clark. Obviously, it comes just 48 hours before basically the most important game in single game of Reading season, if not for the past two or three years. And I said they're going away to a side that are gunning for promotion, a game that you wouldn't expect them to go and particularly get a result at anyway. How does Steve Clark approach this? If you were in his shoes, Charles, what sort of team would you be fielding?
I would play no one who is going to play on Monday if I was in Steve Clark's shoes.
Mikael Anderson's getting a game.
I would not risk anyone who would play on Monday, but that's just me. And I, like I said, I think Reading could lose all their games now and be safe this season, or maybe need to win one more. But realistically, is that one going to come away at Watford? I highly doubt it. So I just wouldn't risk anyone. I just don't see the point ahead of Monday. I mean, Monday's such a massive game, such a huge opportunity for the club in so many ways that I just wouldn't risk anyone. I know fans have paid their money to go down there, and it's that horrible situation of what do you do, but I just think looking at the bigger picture that Monday is just so important that, I mean, why risk a key player? Why risk a Danny Williams injuring his knee? Why risk a McCleary injuring his knee, or Mackie doing something? I just wouldn't risk it. I really wouldn't.
In which case, then, who do you think he will pick on Monday for that game?
On Monday or Saturday?
On Monday, even.
Monday. Well, I mean, I think you'll have this. If Abita's fit and his leg's okay, I would have, obviously, you'd have the back four as they
Kelly
are.
Continue?
I'd have Gunter at right back. Okay. I could understand him putting Kelly there for the away game, but I think for the home game, I'd have Gunter as just with McCleary as that attacking threat down the right-hand side. So I'd have that back four. I'd have McCleary on the right. I'd have Williams and Schalaber in the middle. I don't know, take your pick. I imagine he'll go for Robson-Kanu on the left. And then I'd play Mackie and Pogrebniak up front.
Look, I completely agree. Completely agree. I would like to see a few younger players get a game up at Watford. I know Steve Clark was a little bit prickly when challenged on his youth record in the news conference this week. Didn't take too kindly to the idea that he didn't play youngsters.
Yeah, to be honest, he wasn't even really challenged on that. He just came out with that. It was quite bizarre. He obviously wanted to get that point across, but it wasn't like he was challenged on it really at all. It was quite strange because, I mean, he said that he's been criticised for his hand in the youth players. I haven't really seen that at all, but yeah, he obviously wanted to get that point across, and he could certainly use a few of the younger lads at Watford tomorrow. I noticed the under-21s played and won at Middlesbrough today, about half an hour ago, and I looked at the team sheet and there was no Aaron Cole, no Ryan Edwards, no Sean Long, no Griffin, there was no Keown. There was a lot of the lads who played in the last under-21s game didn't play, didn't even travel up to Borough. So I wonder if, even that American striker, that Novakovic, didn't play. And you just kind of wonder, I wonder if we're going to see a few of them sort of involved, maybe not in the starting 11, but certainly on the bench maybe. I don't know at Watford. I just thought it was quite interesting that none of them featured in that one.
Absolutely. Well, okay. Well, let's get Watford out of the way quickly then. Prediction wise, unfortunately, you're still on a bad run in the prediction league in the league. you've got to end this slump to get yourself back into contention.
I think Reading are going to lose. I think they're going to lose 3-0 or 3-1. I think they will lose 3-1.
Okay. Well, that completes the clean sweep of us predicting doom. I've gone for a 1-0 Watford win. Johnny thinks it's going to be a 5-0 to Watford. Westy's gone for a slightly more optimistic 4-1. And your 3-1 completes the set. So given our record this season, it's going to be 2-0. already can win. Right, and then it's the big one. It's Bradford on Monday. The prize for the winners, a game against Arsenal, Charles. I'm sure that was a heartbreaking draw for you.
Yeah, we'll talk about Bradford first, shall we?
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, what a game, what a massive game, what an opportunity for Reading, for the club, for the supporters. Brilliant to see. It's pretty much a sellout. I think there's only a handful left last time I checked earlier today. A handful of tickets left, so it's going to be bouncing at the Madstead, hopefully. And I can't wait for it. It's just going to be a great game. I just really hope Reading produce. I think they will. I think they'll go through. I think it's going to be a nervy night. I even have a horrible feeling that it might go the whole way to penalties. But I've got a good feeling that Reading are going to get through and get themselves to Wembley.
I'm so superstitious about this, I don't want to say it. But on paper, there is nothing that Reading should fear. Watching that game on Saturday, I know it's not a true representation. It was a dodgy pitch and whatnot. But I just got the feeling that Reading have got nothing to really fear from Bradford. They've got to respect them. If they play to their potential, which unfortunately they haven't done for most of the season, they should get this win.
If Reading play like they played last Tuesday night, they'll win. They will win, definitely. As long as they don't do what Chelsea did. I mean, it's bizarre comparing Reading with Chelsea. But, you know, Chelsea were in absolute cruise control against Bradford, 2-0 up, flying, and just thought the job was done and let Bradford back in, and, you know, Bradford never looked back. Reading just can't afford to do that. They can never once switch off in this game. They've just got to play from the first minute to the 90th minute. And if they do that, and they do it, like you said, to their potential, then they'll win. They definitely convinced they will win as long as they play like I said, like they played on Tuesday night, and they'll get the job done. But if they're even at 95% rather than 100%, Bradford will turn them over.
Yeah, and obviously the potential for extra time and penalties as well. I don't think I'll be able to handle that.
It's going to be one every night. Honestly, I just got this sneaky feeling it might end up going the whole way to penalties. And you just imagine the drama and the tension and everything in that stadium. It's going to be quite a night.
Oh, I've seen too many sets of away fans celebrating they've got to Wembley for my liking. I've seen Burnley fans. What have we seen? Villa fans. I've seen Birmingham fans celebrate their promotion at the Medeski. Too many parties at our expense. This is our night. It needs to be our night, even if I can't go to that semi-final against Arsenal.
The one hopefully we'll see a pitch invasion, which actually means something this week.
God, yeah. Those of you invading against Burnley, take note. So Arsenal do await the winners. This, as far as all Reading fans go, was probably the one draw that you didn't want. Obviously, you're in the semi-final, you can't complain, you're going to get a big side, but Arsenal, Charles, they're the one bogey side for Reading in all our Premier League stints that we just couldn't get anywhere near. If, and it's a big if, Reading do make it through, is there any scenario you can see where your beloved Gunners slip up?
Well, of course there is. Of course there is. It can happen. It's football. Obviously, you know, Arsenal have been a bit of a bogey side to Reading, like
16 you're saying, goals in three games.
I know, it's been pretty one-sided when they've met, but that can all change in one incident. I mean, I can understand football fans. It happens. You're kind of defeatist in situations like that. But I mean, anything can happen. I went to, you know, I was at Arsenal Wigan last year in the semi-final at Wembley, and Arsenal were 7 minutes away from going out, and Wigan were a Championship club then, and Arsenal were terrible that day, and we were very, very lucky to get through. You know, and there's absolutely no reason why it's a foregone conclusion. It's absolutely not. I mean, geez, I've seen enough Arsenal nightmares during my 20 years as a season to get older there to suggest that anything can happen. And Reading can't go and fear that sort of game. This is a game to relish. They're playing at Wembley, if they get there. Obviously, you don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but if they get there, you're playing the FA Cup holders at Wembley. I mean, what a challenge. What something to look forward to. It's not something to be scared of. It's something to go and enjoy. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But my God, if it does work out, you're going to be heroes forever. So it's certainly not something to fear. It's something to enjoy and relish.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're listening, BT and BBC Sport, remember, you want this game played on Sunday, not the Saturday. I will get that trending.
Is your wife definitely going to let you go?
I think she's
going to have a choice.
I think she's accepted the fact that it's possibly a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I think she'll let me go on the Sunday. Saturday, no.
Yeah, I can understand that.
To the people that I'm dragging along to this day, I do apologise as well. So, anyway, right, so we're both thinking win. We're both thinking Reading go through.
Yeah, I'm going with penalties.
Okay, I think they're going to win in normal time, probably 2-1. But this doesn't count for the Prediction League, and I will make sure that that somebody else does predict doom just to balance it out. Right, just before we go then, one other thing. Sweet Caroline, is it still stuck in your head?
Yeah, it didn't quite work too well. Were you there on Tuesday?
I was.
It didn't work too well at the start, did it? It's certainly, I think afterwards it caught on a little bit more and everyone's happy after the win. But it's certainly something to persist with, isn't it? It's you know, it was kind of stuck in my head, I have to say. After the game, there was a few people singing it even up in the press box, so
they've just got to stick with it. Yeah. It and not expect it to take off straight away. I think these things take, you know, sometimes take years to evolve.
Exactly.
I know the club held a vote at the start of the season and they picked an anthem then, and now they've changed it around. Just stick with it and let it breathe.
Exactly. It's certainly not going to take off after one game. Like I said, you got to do it, get it sort of ingrained in everyone's minds over a season or two. But hey, I mean, what? Imagine if they get to Wembley on Monday night and play it immediately after the full-time whistle when the celebration is in full swing. I'm sure it will be belted out to the rafters then.
Well, it'd be better to play that before the game than the journey. Don't Stop Believing that we had before the playoff final against Swansea the other year. It was cringeworthy, to say the least. Right, that just about wraps up the show this week. Just a quick note, there won't be a main edition of the show before the Bradford game. We can't get together on Sunday. And obviously, there's a game on Monday night, so we'll be back on Tuesday. At the moment, it's looking like myself, Johnny Handbags, and Rob Langham as well. No Westy, who will possibly be crying after Monday's result. So we'll be back.
No, he won't.
Ooh, I don't know. Right. So that is that. So we'll hopefully be back on Tuesday. As for me and Charles, we'll be back on Friday to pick up the bones. Anything in particular on Get Ready to look forward to over the next few days, Charles?
Well, just plenty of build up to. Well, obviously we've got the game on Saturday, but then plenty of build up. All eyes turn to Monday night, and then all the reaction to hopefully, fingers crossed, booking our spot at Wembley.
An online PDF pullout special on the cards.
the
March to Wembley pullout. Right, that just about wraps up. Charles, thank you very much for joining me. And fingers crossed we're celebrating on Monday singing Sweet Caroline.
Indeed. Have a good weekend.
And you. Take care.
See you later.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.